course. I meant the others, who are not human and yet part of humanity's universe. War and destiny and pestilence and the rest of us. We are envisaged as human by humans, and thus in various fashions we take on some aspects of humanity. It can be no other way. Even the very body shape forces upon our minds a certain way of observing the universe. We pick up human traits. Curiosity, anger, restlessness.
This is basic stuff, Grandfather.
Yes, and you know, therefore, that some of us take an interest in humanity.
I know, I am one of the results.
Yes, and some of us take an interest which is, more...
Interesting?
Personal. And you have heard me speak of the personification of time?
You didn't tell me much. She lives in a palace of glass, you once said. Susan felt a small, shameful, and yet curiously satisfying sensation in seeing Death discomfited. He looks like someone who is being forced to reveal a skeleton in the closet.
Yes, she fell in love with a human.
How very romantic, said Susan, inserting the K. Now she was being childishly perverse, she knew, but life as Death's granddaughter was not easy, and occasionally she had the irresistible urge to annoy.
A pun or play on words, said Death wearily, although I suspect you are merely trying to be tiresome.
Well, that sort of thing used to happen a lot in antiquity, didn't it? Said Susan. Poets were always falling in love with moonlight or hyacinths or something, and goddesses were forever.
But that was real, said Death.
How real do you mean?
Time had a son.
How could...
Time had a son. Someone mostly mortal. Someone like you.
Tick. A member of the Clockmaker's Guild called on Jeremy once a week. It was nothing formal. In any case, there was often some work for him to do, or some results to be collected, because whatever else you might say about him, the boy had a genius for clocks. Informally, the visit was also a delicate way to make sure that the lad was taking his medicine and wasn't noticeably crazy. The clockmakers were well aware that the intricate mechanisms of the human brain could occasionally throw a screw. The guild's members tended to be meticulous people, always in pursuit of an inhuman accuracy, and this took its toll. It could cause problems. Springs were not the only things that got wound up. The guild committee were, by and large, kind and understanding men. They were not, on the whole, men accustomed to guile. Dr. Hopkins, the guild's secretary, was surprised when the door of Jeremy's shop was opened by a man who appeared to have survived a very serious accident.
I'm here to see Mr. Jeremy, he managed.
Yes, sir, the master is in, sir.
And you, are...
Igor, sir. Mr. Jeremy was kind enough to take me on, sir.
You work for him, said Dr. Hopkins, looking Igor up and down.
Yes, sir.
Have you been standing too close to some dangerous machinery?
No, sir. He is in the workshop, sir.
Mr. Igor, said Dr. Hopkins, as he was ushered into the shop. You do know that Mr. Jeremy has to take medicine, don't you?
Yes, sir. He mentions it often.
And he, his general health is...
Good, sir. He is enthusiastic for his work, sir. Bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
Bushy-tailed, eh? Said Dr. Hopkins weakly. Mr. Jeremy doesn't usually keep servants. I'm afraid he threw a clock at the head of the last assistant he had.
Really, sir?
He hasn't thrown a clock at your head, has he?
No, sir. He acts quite normally, said Igor, a man with four thumbs and stitches all round his neck.
He opened the door into the workshop.
Dr. Hopkins, Mr. Jeremy, I will make some tea, sir.
Jeremy was sitting bolt upright at the table, his eyes gleaming.
Ah, doctor, he said. How kind of you to come.
Dr. Hopkins took in the workshop. There had been changes. Quite a large piece of lath and plaster wall.